Welcome to the NOLA Drink Show. Join us as we explore the world of drink, food, and culture in New Orleans and beyond. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody. Hey, Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for listening to the NOLA Drink Show, friends. I do appreciate it this week, as always. I hope everybody injected disinfectant over the weekend. Now, see, that's sarcasm. Okay, that's actually sarcasm. But in all seriousness, friends, I do hope that everybody out there is doing well, that you're healthy, that you're safe, and that you're doing what you're supposed to be doing. Going to be some interesting days ahead. Please make good decisions. I think a lot of our elected officials seemingly are incapable of making good decisions. No surprise there. But make good decisions to keep you and your family, your friends, your coworkers safe. That's the biggest thing right now, I think. Got a really good show coming up for you here today. This is the first time that we've actually done a show where I was around guests as opposed to doing things by phone. Don't worry, we maintained our proper social distance. What we did is we actually taped this on my front porch, which allowed us to sit well over 6 feet apart, actually. And we welcome back our resident beer experts, Sal Mortellaro and Matt Horney. And yeah, the theme's just kind of like drinking beer on my front porch. If you listen to the show regularly, you know those guys are on about once a quarter, and we often talk about styles of beer and these sorts of things. You know, we talk about yeast, talk about hops, whatever. In this case, we certainly get into some stuff. We taste some interesting things, and we talk about it. So really, it's just drink a beer on my front porch. It's a real stretch for me to do that. So we just stuck a couple microphones in front of our faces there and taped the show. But really interesting stuff. We talk about some interesting beers. We talk about mead a little bit. And then in the podcast-only segment, if you're listening on the radio, go to noladrinks.com. To get that, we talk a little bit about the effects of the coronavirus situation on breweries that are driven by tap rooms, meaning mostly on-premise situations or small-scale distribution if they do sell outside. Matt Horney, that I mentioned, one of our two guests, is the brewmaster at Old Rail Brewing Company in Old Mandeville, and they are certainly in that boat. So we talk about some things there, have some numbers for you, and just some observations and thoughts from Sal and Matt on that front. A quick note here, friends, want to mention the passing of the great New Orleans R&B and blues singer Alton Big Al Carson, who died on Sunday. Apparently, he had suffered a heart attack about 2 weeks ago, unfortunately, and then succumbed to the effects of that yesterday on Sunday, if you're listening here on the radio that day. And yeah, you know, one of the guys that I've seen a whole lot of hanging around the music scene in New Orleans used to have I think he kept up until the coronavirus shut everything down. He had his regular gig at the Funky Pirate on Bourbon Street, saw him a ton of times there, a ton of times at French Quarter Fest. Just a great singer, and our condolences go out to his family and friends and all of his fans, of which I am one out there. So we're going to spin a handful of his tunes in and out of the breaks during the show here today as our tribute to Big Al Carson. Friends, what we're going to do, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show, and then we're going to come back to my front porch for our featured interview, Drinking Beer with Sal and Matt. Come on back.
Look here. I was gonna clean my room until I got high. I was gonna get up and get the broom, but then I got high. My room is still messed up, and I know why. Hey, because I got high, because I got high. I drink champagne when I'm thirsty. Woo. I smoke a reefer when I want to get high. Yeah. I drink champagne when I'm thirsty. Yeah. And I smoke a reefer when I want to get high. There ought not be no law around town, y'all, for a man and a woman to smoke a little reefer sometimes. Well,
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for listening into the show, friends. As always, yeah, as you know, we're doing something different here. We're doing beers on my front porch with our resident and yet still unpaid beer experts. First up, Sal Mortellaro. Sal, how are you, buddy?
I'm well. Thank you.
Good to see you, man.
It's a good change of scenery.
Yeah, and Matt,
literally,
it's kind of fun, huh? We're socially distant here, and when you rolled up, and we'll introduce Matt here in just a second. We talked about we didn't even recognize you when you got out of the car, man, because your hair is like as long as mine.
This is probably the longest my hair has been in a very long time.
Yeah, I didn't know, and this is Matt Horney, who is also our guest and resident beer expert. Matt, you were shocked to see Sal's hair, weren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think I've ever seen it that long.
So are you going to get kicked out of the reserves and kicked out of the St. Tammany Parish Auxiliary
Sheriff's
Office?
It's quite possible. They might say I'm a little too shabby for that. So
I guess with the Sheriff's Auxiliary, is it Auxiliary? Is that what we say?
It's reserves.
Okay. So, I mean, like, you can wear a hat, right? So you can kind of hide it for a while.
Actually, so some people do have... normal haircuts, if you will, but I keep mine short for the military, of course.
Okay, got it. So you haven't had to go do that in a while, is what we're saying.
We got the last two drills were more or less canceled as a result
because of the situation.
Because of this, we had to do some alternative stuff. We still got time in, but it was a lot of online Zoom meetings and then classes. Stuff we had to do as opposed to actually being there.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, interesting. Jeez, it touches everything, doesn't it? And Matt, your facial hair program is looking as strong as always. It was quite shocking a few months ago when you had shaved your beard off. You were sitting like right next to me at the bar when we could still go to bars, and I didn't even recognize you. But it's back. It's good to see you back to normal.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've been to the barber for a little beard trim. it's doing good. I'm content with it. I had to give myself a haircut, which I haven't done in years. And that's coming in.
Oh, you did that yourself?
Yeah.
That looks good, man.
Yeah,
you did a good job.
Thank you.
I
want
to go see Matt.
Wait a minute.
just don't look at the backside.
Yeah,
I'm not really good at giving it a little neck trim, kind of getting a nice line across the back of the neck.
That's tough. That's tough. You got to rely on somebody else to do it. Or you have to have like one of those, multi-room restroom, multi-mirrored, restrooms or something like that. Well, Matt, you're the brewmaster over at Old Rail Brewing Company, a very fine microbrew here in Old Mandeville, where we live, right around the corner from our front porch where we are. And as we were sort of talking about, we're just drinking beers here on the front porch, friends, today and talking about it. And you were kind enough to bring us a couple different things. But the first thing that we're tasting is your Helles, which I think, and Sally, feel free to chime in here too, man. I mean, this has definitely been one of the calling card beers of yours, I think.
Yeah. This is our most popular beer that we have. And we were kind of rotating back and forth with the Pilsner and the Helles. And we're down to a couple kegs left of the Pilsner, and we have this transferred, filtered, all set and ready to go. And I want to give a little shout out to the Mandeville community and those even in Covington, Lacombe, and in Madisonville, because through this time we've had a lot of our customers, a lot of regulars, and coming and supporting us and buying beer and keeping things moving and. The food and our new chef and the new menu and everything. So my hat's off to the people around here for really helping us out.
Yeah, that's cool. And we'll make sure that we give all the information for Old Rail, because you guys are still open. People can come and buy growlers, and people can come and get go food right now.
Yeah. We're doing full glass growlers, and we're doing 16-ounce mason jars. We do have an order in for a crowler machine, which I know a lot of people have been asking about, and that's kind of, some of our customers have known about it, but this is kind of first public announcement that that's actually in the works. And we'll be doing 24-ounce cans.
Oh, you are. Oh, so you're going to start canning too. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's cool. Mm-hmm. Okay. Do me a favor for people who don't know, what is the difference between a growler and a crowler?
So the crowler, most people would probably be familiar with a 32-ounce can. It's like a big oil can. Foster's style kind of can. The growler is a 64-ounce jug. glass
so,
jug.
So really talking about a large can versus like a big jug, like a classic jug band handle.
Right.
Jug.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Sal, what's a Helles?
So a Helles is a German lager. Generally, it's on the malty side. This one's actually a really good representation of it. You really get that nice malt that comes through fairly low on alcohol, probably approximately 5% on this. Good German noble hops and just a good clean yeast profile. No yeast profile, if you will. But I'm really excited that this beer is back on. Pilsner was great. The Czech Pilsner was great, but this is definitely my after work drinking beer. Get off work and go have a beer, and this is 9 out of 10 times what I'd get.
Is this an old style of German beer?
So? It is. It's considered one of the traditional German lagers. Okay. It's definitely on the older end, probably around 1400s or 1500s, accurately approximate.
What are it's like Martin? Is that another one? That's what are some of the other traditional German?
So as you pointed out, some of the traditional Germans are going to be your Box, your Helles Box, your Ice Box, Doppelbox, Mertzens, and I'm missing one of the main ones.
That's all right. So, but that's a pretty good list. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. How would we, and either one of you guys, how would we sort of characterize what makes the difference? Is it the darker malts? Is it sort of the change
correct.
In malts? Is that the idea?
Okay. Yeah, correct. It's going to be the malts used that impart the difference in flavor and in color.
Okay, gotcha.
So, hops to a limited extent, but they use mainly noble hops, which is going to be more on kind of the floral, slightly spicy. So your hop profile is going to be pretty much the same. Pretty much all the vast majority of German beers are going to be lagers. There's a couple of ales, but 9 out of 10 are going to be lagers. So,
okay.
But really, it's really going to be that malt profile and that alcohol strength that differentiates them as a whole.
Well, and do you, Matt, like, mm-hmm. When we talk about the difference in an alcohol,
yeah.
What is that a function of? So we're talking about being varying the malts,
mm-hmm.
but what's the variance in alcohol then, and where does that come from?
So that's basically coming from the formation of the alcohol is from the grain. And in some of these beers like the Helles, the grain bill is really simple. It's really not very complicated. There's just a few, you know, we're getting down to small pounds, for batches that we make here at our scale, but it's even that low, like 2% of the grain, will be specialty malts. It may be even lower in some cases. But basically the malt, is what is going to produce the sugar that's going to be, consumed by the yeast and made into alcohol. So if we were doing some of our Bock beers or something, we're going to have a lot more grain. Recipe is going to be a lot bigger. Helles is really simple, low grain bill, lower okay. alcohol.
So lower mm-hmm. alcohol. And the only effect then that if we're toasting the malts or darker malts, that doesn't affect the alcohol, right? That just affects the flavor profile.
It does not. And actually, I was thinking of the Munich Dunkel, which is
yeah, okay. Yeah.
I couldn't. I had a brain fart for a second, but no, yeah, you know, it's funny because you have so many people who say, "Oh, I don't drink stouts, I don't drink dark beers because they're so alcoholic or they're so big mm-hmm. or they're too." But that's not necessarily true at all. The Munich Dunkel is actually a perfect example of a dark beer that's probably a little bit lighter than this one in body and in alcohol.
Okay.
So, yeah.
I think it's interesting, too, because when people especially now say that, Sal, you know, I think, like, if I'm not mistaken, a lot of stouts and a lot of porters out there are oftentimes, like, what, 6%, 6.5%, mm-hmm. I think is pretty reasonable range in there.
Correct.
And when we start talking about all these go ahead.
Well, no, I mean, and you're right, and that's really more on the American craft side especially. But if you look at these traditional, like, Irish stouts, dry stouts, Guinness is about 4.5%.
Yeah, right.
It's a relatively easy drinking beer. It's a light beer.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah, especially these days when we talk about all these super crazy mm-hmm. IPAs and things like that, when you start pushing those bounds of, I mean, I tasted, I was out in California not too long ago before all this happened, and, you know, I was tasting IPAs that were like, people had ones that were 12%, man.
Well, and, you know, but mm-hmm. also, mm-hmm. but also too, in a lot of these extreme brewers, if you will, these craft brewers, American craft brewers, if they
pick a style to make a big beer out of, it's usually a stout. So mm-hmm. with that being said, that's kind of an offshoot of the point that we were talking about before. I mean, just because it's dark doesn't necessarily mean it's big.
It's high in alcohol. Yeah. What do you think about that, Matt, to the trends these days? Because I know, and we've talked about this a lot on the shows. We've talked about IPAs. Mm-hmm. We've talked about New England style. We've talked about West Coast style. People keep pushing the alcohol on these things, man. That trend really has not gone away. And I mean, it's almost like, at what point do we come up? Are we talking like a barley wine here or something?
Right. Yeah. And this is one of the things I noticed when I was at All Relation Brewing Company. Some of their pastry stouts and stuff get pretty high on the alcohol. For me personally, it's not, if I go someplace and I see that, I'll just want a little taster of it. I'm not going to drink, you know, a
16
lot.
Ounces yeah. or 2 pints after.
Right. Yeah. And in a lot of places, including, you know, the Old Rail, we have our barley wine that's 10%, and that's the style. And, we serve it in a smaller glass. You know, we do a 10 ounce pour on that. It might be an 8 ounce pour, 8 or 10. And then some of the other stuff, like with our Imperial Stout, we try and keep that around 9%. We don't want to go too high because you want to be able to enjoy it. And sometimes, you know, you have that sip, and especially our Crazy Train Coffee Stout, you just want another sip and you want to have another one, but you know, you have to stop at some point because you don't, you know, you want to try something else, but this right, is kind right. of like,
you want to walk home.
You want to walk home. This is like it's kind of nice because you can have two of them and you'll be okay. But, yeah, when you get up to 13, 14, 15%, I remember Sal, you remember this when Avery did that series?
The Demon series?
Yeah.
Where's this? What beer?
Avery Brewing Company.
Oh, out of Colorado.
Avery, okay, sure.
Yeah, and those were about 17%.
Oh, they were insane. Insanely good, but they were also insane, too, that they got that big, that high.
Yeah, that was kind of crazy because you would just pour your glass and, you know, go sit down and watch a football game or whatever.
And not stand up and watch the entire game.
People always joke about Belgian beers that they're sneaky. You know, you have a couple of Chimay's and you can't really stand up. But beers like that, they're pretty forward. Like Matt said, you know, at least they're drinkable. When he was talking about the Old Rail beers, but you start pushing that high alcohol, it's 17-18%. You notice it, and you really. It's hard to put.
And you're kind of in a different category, I think, when you're talking about that. Let's do this, you guys. Let's take a little break here on the show. We're going to come back, talk a little bit more about what's in our glass, and maybe talk a little bit more about some of these other trends out there. And be sure you stick around for the podcast-only segment. If you're listening on the radio, go to noladrinks.com and get the show there, because we're going to talk a little bit, mostly anecdotally, but talk a little bit about some of the effects that the coronavirus situation has had on tap rooms, something that's important to all of us for tasting and all of us for social gathering. So we'll have some conversation about that too. But in the meantime, friends, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. Come on.
When you look at me, please don't call me fat, 'cause I'm built for comfort. I ain't built for
speed. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for listening into the NOLA Drink Show, as always. Yeah, we're doing something a little different. We are here on my front porch drinking beers with our resident beer experts and still unpaid Sal and Matt. And yeah, kind of a nice evening here, a spring evening in Old Mandeville. Got some kids playing in the neighborhood. We're not going to offer them any beer because they're too young. Even though coronavirus is going on, underage drinking is still frowned upon, especially over here on the North Shore. Matt, you've brought us a very special beer from your trip to Belgium yes. A couple years ago. And, man, this is something pretty interesting. Tell us what we're tasting.
Well, first of all, I just want to say that there is no need to apply for PPP funding for this program, so we're good there.
Yes, we don't have to worry about that. Thank you. We'd be rejected on multiple levels on all kinds of things. Yeah, you guys aren't paid, so when we run payroll, it comes out zero.
Yeah, there you go.
So, I mean, we could qualify for PPP. It would just be zero.
It's easiest to pay back.
It's easier to pay back. 1% of zero is still zero.
Yeah. There you go. well, yeah, this beer is really good. So, yeah, on a trip to Belgium, which if some listeners are familiar with, we've talked about this before, but we're finally bringing beers out from that trip, and that was about a year and a half ago. And this is a Rodenbach beer, a Flanders Red Ale, Character Rouge. It's aged in oak barrels, and... the thing about Rodenbach that's kind of interesting is it's not a spontaneous fermentation brewery. It's all controlled. Everything's dialed in.
Okay. So it's not like the natural yeast thing in the boats outside or
right.
The ships?
Yeah.
Ships. Yes.
Yep. So they do their yeast fermentation, then they do their bacterial fermentation, and it's kind of everything's supposed to be replicated and hit the same way every single time. So everything is done per the numbers kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But the place is really impressive, beautiful brewery. And the foeders are amazing. They basically big, massive, you know, 20-foot tall wood barrels. Yeah, this is nice. It's got a nice sour, note to it, like nice cherry pie kind of thing, a sour cherry. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this is a joy.
It's absolutely beautiful. And Sal, I want you to tell people what it's called in just a second, but I'll ask people to harken back to a show that we did. I think it was like maybe a couple times ago that you guys were on, so probably 6 months ago, when we talked about sour beers.
Correct.
And as we noted during that time, sour, that term in of itself, that's not a specific style. It's meant to categorize a set of styles in sort of a broad sense. Mm-hmm. So a Flanders Red is a sour beer, but a Flanders Red is a style, right?
Correct.
But what? So tell us a little bit about that, and then tell us what this beer is, how it's referred to colloquially.
So the Flanders Red, there's two styles, the Flanders Red and the Oud Bruin, or the okay. Old Brown. They're both malty beers. The Oud Bruin is going to be a little bit more malt-driven. A little bit less acidic.
Did you say malty beers or malty beers?
Malty beers.
Oh, okay, okay.
Oud Bruin is going to be a little more malty, malt-driven, as opposed to a little bit less acidic, a little bit less sour than the Flanders Red. But this particular beer, Flanders Red, is a pretty traditional style. You don't see them a lot brewed in the U.S. Really, the only place that you can really get one is out of Belgium itself. As Matt noted, you're going to get a really nice, tart, sweet cherry pie crust. Just a lovely beer as a whole. The late, great beer hunter, beer writer, Michael Jackson, not of musical fame, but of actual beer fame, referred to these as the Burgundies of Belgium. That they just this really nice, almost slightly wine-like beers, slightly wine-like quality to the beer.
Especially the acid, right? That's a great point. It's really the acid that I think makes what you're saying very accurate.
Yep. You just get those dark fruit, dark cherry notes, and a little bit of acid, and yeah. Yeah, they're lovely. I love these. I love any malt. So malty beer, sour beers are my favorite beers, and this just kind of hits the head on both ends.
Yeah, and it's got I mean, Matt, you said you brought this back about a year and a half ago, so this obviously has some age on it, and that I'm guessing it's the acid structure that allows us to stand up. And I mean, the fruit structure is still fantastic on this beer.
Yeah, yeah. those things do give a lot of longevity to the beer.
Or longevity.
Longevity. There we go. I think this one might be stronger than I thought. yeah, it's held up really well. I'm, you know, this isn't a beer that I would have expected to open up anyways when I got back from Belgium. It's something that I would have waited on. But yeah, it tends to age really nice.
It's really beautiful, and since we were talking about longevity, there. And then I wanted, because Sal was referring to this beer, and he was saying it was acetic.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the same thing as acidic?
It is not. It's acidic, yes, in that it's acetic as in like acetic acid. Acetic.
Yeah, got it. I just was trying to, you know.
Yeah.
And not Hasidic, like if you're a traditional Mazel practitioner. Tov. Mazel Tov, right? Exactly. So I just want to make sure that we're clear. And Sal is a, we should probably say this now, Sal is a master, grandmaster beer judge, one of about, what, 65 or so on the planet? Are we still at that number?
It was 74.
So the ranks have grown just a little bit. But
well,
still,
yeah, when I got it, was 74.
Oh, 74. Yes. Okay. So, you know, incredibly impressive. So whether it's acidic or acetic, I think he can kind of use whatever term he wants to use, don't you think?
I think, yeah, you probably earned it.
I think he probably earned it. And well, Sal,
I can pass.
Yeah,
it's a lot of knowledge. It's a lot of knowledge in there.
If there is
it gets
a lot
jumbled up every
exactly.
once in a while.
Well, you just since we're on the topic, we got about 2.5 minutes, guys, before we take a break again. But so one of the things you do for the beer judging certification program is you give exams.
Correct.
And
yes.
So you actually just proctored an exam today.
I did. So there's a couple of exams with the BJCP or the Beer Judge Certification Program. The exam that we gave was kind of the culmination exam, the written exam. And we had a couple of guys come down for it. Our furthest person came away about 5 hours from Starkville, Mississippi. And then we had one from Baton Rouge. And then we had a another person from Lafayette area come down, who's actually a brewmaster of a well-known local brewery and the only advanced Cicerone in the state.
Ah,
so
okay.
He's trying to rank up on the BJCP side.
Yeah, and what we got about a minute and a half. So what would tell people what a Cicerone is, and then what would kind of be the difference between the two?
So the BJCP is the OG, if you will. It's been around since 1985. Yeah, that's right. it's been around since 1985, not for profit. So they kind of do the same thing. The BJCP focuses more on the actual technical side, whereas, and I'm very broad strokes.
Sure,
here.
Sure, yeah, of course.
And the Cicerone is more on the industry bar.
So it's kind of like a sommelier, right? Where there's a little bit more of an emphasis on the service side.
There is, yeah. So you have to know a little bit more about draft systems and how they work, mm-hmm. Food pairing, recommending, beers, whereas the BJCP, and they do very much intersect in a lot of ways.
Sure.
But the BJCP is more on the actual technical brewing side. Technical style side.
Yeah, and identify. Yeah, I got it. And actually, I think so for listeners out there, we talked about this somewhat recently on the show with Maggie Campbell, who is the head distiller and president at Privateer Rum. She's also standing in her candidacy for a Master of Wine, that program. And that's more like the BJCP, where it's how it's made, identifying through tasting how it's made, understanding the technical side, whereas a sommelier, the emphasis, there's that part to a degree, but then there's also the aspects of like service, mm-hmm. and presentation and so on, and pairing and that sort of thing. And I think that's probably a decent analog between BJCP and Cicerone.
Correct. Yep.
Cool. Well, let's do this, you guys. We're going to take a little break here on the show. Then we're going to come back. And Sal, aside from being a grandmaster beer judge, Matt, he is also mm-hmm. – Sal has many certifications.
He
and
does.
Another one, he does. And another one of his certifications is a mead judge as well. So Sal brought us a mead, and we're going to taste a mead cocktail. We're going to tell you all about it. Take a little break here on the Noel Drink Show, friends. Come on. Song, too many. Hey, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian D. here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for listening into the show, friends, as always. Yeah, we're here on the front porch in Old Mandeville, and we've been drinking beer with Sal and Matt. We're going to drink mead here in just 1 second. But Sal, you wanted to add something about the Rodenbach real quick that we were talking about during the break. But the wine quality aspect.
We mentioned that they were called the Burgundies of Belgium, of course, because they're fermented in the fodder, the wooden fodder. You get some of the nice tannins off of it, which really lends to that wine-like quality of them.
Yeah, awesome. So, that tannic quality for sure is really beautiful stuff, Matt. Thank you for sharing that again, by the way. So we noted, Sal, that before we went to the break, among your many, many certifications, you're also a certified mead judge, certified barbecue judge. We just kind of revisited here. Forgot about that one. We're not going to talk about that today. That'll be something for another time. But let's talk about mead a little bit. So what is mead in general? And then let's talk about the mead. I'm just going to give you the floor here, man. What is mead? And then let's talk about this mead. And you made us a mead cocktail, but we'll get into that in a little bit.
Sure. So mead is arguably one of the oldest fermented drinks out there. It is made primarily from honey and water with yeast. It can be anywhere from low alcohol to high alcohol. That's mead in a nutshell, basically. Mm-hmm. This particular cocktail that we have
Before you get to the cocktail, so honey and yeast. So where we're going to get a lot of differences is different yeast, right? But then we're also going to get differences from the different
The varietal of honey itself.
Yeah, that's the big one.
And,
okay.
And of course, you got to remember, just like there's varietal of grapes, the varietal of honey comes from the actual different plants themselves, the different flowers themselves. So wine is all grapes, right? Different varietals of grapes, but the varietals of honey are different varietals of plants,
mm-hmm.
The flowering plants.
Right. So that's going to bring a different flavor characteristic
each
mead.
Correct.
Got it. So let's talk about this mead, because people are doing a lot of interesting things with mead these days. For those of you who maybe have had it before, you might sort of just think fermented honey like you're talking about. But this one brings some other flavor notes to it.
So this is what's called the Melomel, or a mead that's made with fruit. This particular mead that we're drinking is out of Moonlight Meadery out of New Hampshire. This one is a Common Disaster. Is the name of it. And it is a mead that is made with pineapple and chipotle peppers.
And that combination makes all the sense in the world, because it's almost like an al pastor approach,
sure,
to mead, right?
Yep, 100%. Just that sweet heat, just nice. Something a little weird, but just works.
So now we're seeing a lot of that in the mead world, right, where people are doing a lot of experimentation, bringing in other flavors, like bringing in fruit and other considerations, right?
They are. You used to get a lot of mead several years ago. It was just very straight, a Melomel with raspberries just your typical normal things. But now people are starting to throw things like as we're drinking here, chipotle peppers, just weird things in there to kind of make it different.
What? So when you're doing the judging on mead then, because is it sort of like all bets are off? We talk about styles and beer. So like when you guys, and you're both certified beer judges, when you guys are judging beer, you're looking at it, you're judging based on a particular style, like a category, right? And with mead, is it broken down that way? Are you struggling with that? Because people are doing so many different things.
There are actual style guidelines,
okay,
just like beer. There's of course, they're a little bit more open interpretation, because that can change with the fruit addition or the spice additions or whatever the case may be. Piments, for example, they're actually with grapes. So that can actually change with the addition, but your still base structure of the mead is what is judged, mm-hmm, with the consideration of the additions.
Okay. What when you say pine mints, is that a grape addition to mead then?
Yes.
Okay. Fermented grape.
Yes. So when I took my mead judge exam, there was a pine mint that was on there that was actually a Sangiovese grape.
Oh.
So it was pine mint with Sangiovese must, which is really, really fun.
Okay, so using the must from Sangio.
Correct.
Okay, that's really interesting. So tell us briefly about the cocktail that you made then using the chipotle pineapple.
So this, I went ahead and just kept it kind of straightforward, kind of simple. I went ahead and used this particular, the mead, the Common Disaster, with some muddled blueberries, muddled mint, just mixed it all together, topped it off with some soda water, and here we are drinking it.
Yeah, nice and refreshing. Matt, what are your thoughts, buddy?
This is nice. It's a great. It's kind of. It's got the mint in it, but it's kind of got that summery, refreshing mint julep kind of quality to it. Porch drinking cocktail.
Nice porch drinking cocktail. Mm-hmm. Like that's a good term right there. And like we're talking about, because that sort of sweet heat combination works really well. So you get the mint. I mean, a lot of this obviously just works like on a culinary level. It's a really solid approach. And I like, Sal, what you've done here with this, because mead to me, and tell me if I'm wrong, because I've really only had it a handful of times, almost exclusively with you. I've had it a couple other times, but almost exclusively with you. There's a nice viscosity to mead. So I think, and I'm just throwing it out there, like with the drink here, You know, the fruit, so needing a little bit of acidity to cut through the viscosity, I think, is actually important to make a good drink out of this.
It is, and that's one of the things about mead. You have to remember, you have anywhere from low alcohol to high alcohol, thin, dry meads to just sweet, viscous meads. And, of course, you can add anything to them, any fruit, any spice, more or less any addition to a mead. So it's all, meads are almost like a they can be still, they can be sparkling, petulant. So meads are almost like a liqueur to a certain extent. And they can be a very good addition to making a cocktail.
What's a typical alcohol range on mead, Sal?
Your typical, your standard strength mead, if you're not going sack strength, which is higher, or hydromel, which literally means honey water, which is lower, your typical mead is approximately 12 to 14% wine.
So on par with wine.
Correct.
Okay, got it. That's really interesting. Matt, do you have a lot of experience with mead outside of drinking it with Sal occasionally, like me?
not really. There was a couple of meaderies up in Michigan when I go back up there and visit family, but not entirely. It's not something I'm too frequently exposed to. Mm-hmm. But as Sal's gotten into the mead clubs and stuff like that, back in our day, we've tried some different ones.
Pounded some meads.
Yeah.
Are we seeing, Sal, an increase in, we've got about 2 minutes, guys, before we close the radio portion out here, but are we seeing an increase in mead production in general, in the U.S.? Or is that hard to say?
It's hard to say. Definitely not around here. You see a lot of the meaderies up north. You see a handful of meaderies out of Texas. Louisiana does not have any meaders. Meaderies or mazers.
Okay, mazers. Okay.
Mead makers.
Is that the term, mazer?
Yes.
Okay.
You see it a lot of places, but here. But, of course, obviously Corona, a lot of, I know these guys in particular, Moonlight Meadery, they're kind of like everybody, just kind of worried what's going to happen right now.
Sure, of course. Well, let's do this, you guys. We've got about a minute and a half before we close the radio portion of the show. Sal, tell people where they can find out about the BJCP, the Beer Judging Certification Program.
BJCP is going to be bjcp.org. Just Google Beer Judge Certification Program on the internet or on Facebook. You can find us, Beer Judge Certification Program itself, or Louisiana BJCP if you ever want to be certified or...
Yeah, awesome.
And come and judge it. Come and if you want to see what it's like to judge beer competition, you can find me, Louisiana BJCP. I'm really more than happy to get people interested and have them join sometime.
Awesome. And so people are proctoring tests around you here, but people around the country. And
of course, it's an international organization. Correct.
Okay,
yep.
Awesome. And Matt, you're over there at Old Rail Brewing mm-hmm. Company here in Old Mandeville, where we are, so about 35, 40 minutes outside of downtown New Orleans. Mm-hmm. You guys are open for Go Food, and you guys are open for Growlers.
Yes. The biggest change that we've made is that we are only open Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Okay.
I think it's 11 to 8, okay. I believe, is our hours now.
What's the website and Facebook?
Old Rail. I always get this wrong. I mix it up. OldRailBrewing.com or OldRailBrewery.com. And then
just Google it.
Yeah, Google it. It'll come up. And then, of course, Facebook, Old Rail.
Awesome. And Sal, you'll agree with me. Matt is one of the best beer makers in the state, if not the best beer maker in the state.
I wholeheartedly agree 100%.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
We're going to close out the radio portion of the show. Matt and Sal are sticking around for another shot with Nola Drinks. Probably talk a little bit more about me, and then we're going to talk a little bit about the effects of the coronavirus on tap rooms and things like that. So, friends, if you are listening on the radio, remember to be kind to one another. Use your turn signal. Take care of each other right now. Do what you're supposed to do. And until next time, cheers, y'all.
Wash your hands.
Wash your hands.
and he said, all these saints and all these sinners will try.
All right, everybody, up another shot with Nola Drinks. Hey, thanks for sticking around for this part of the show, friends. Hope you're enjoying our conversation here with our resident and yet still unpaid beer experts, Matt and Sal. And yeah, we're going to bounce right back to my front porch. I had to go really far since I've mostly been taping the show here in my home studio. Have to walk downstairs and go out the front door. We're going to bounce right back out there to the front porch and continue our conversation with those guys. Talk a little bit more. I think we touch on mead briefly, and then we also talk about some of the effects and potential effects on the coronavirus or from the coronavirus situation as it relates to tap room driven breweries. Here we go. Yep, another shot with Nola Drinks. Brian Diaz here with you, as you know. Thanks for listening in from my front porch here in Old Mandeville and hanging out with Sal and Matt, as we generally do once a quarter. We usually do this over at Old Rail Brewing Company in Old Mandeville, and we told you about them in the previous few segments. So go check them out because they are open for business. You can get good beers to go from our good buddy Matt and some good food over there, but we had to mix things up here a little bit differently, and we're sitting socially distantly apart. That's a lot of adverbs in there, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about a couple things sort of related to coronavirus. And we'll talk a little. Matt has some numbers for us and stuff, but we're going to talk a little bit more anecdotally about maybe some of the potential effects that it's having on small producers and people generally that are taproom driven in general. I'm going to give a quick shout out to our friend Phil Minisalli from PM Brokerage, with whom we do Liquid Luggage, our good buddy Phil. And we're sipping on Pelugar right now, which is a very fine European Polish, if I remember right, I think, but caraway-driven, sort of like vodka, gin, but it's a caraway. It's a wheat and grain distillate, but it's caraway-driven as the added botanical. It's like rye bread in a glass. It's really interesting. Wanted to share that with these guys. We're giving a shout-out to Phil because he represents that through Price Imports here in the New Orleans market. You can go find it in some of your other markets if that's where you're listening. And Sal, we wanted to circle back a little bit on the mead thinger, talking about the judging a little bit, because I was just very curious how it kind of works. And you said that really you're kind of like judging it more from a wine perspective than maybe other things.
You are. So, of course, beer is beer as far as judging goes. But mead is unique. So my certification is actually through the BJCP to become a certified mead judge.
Oh, I didn't know they did that too.
Yes, so it's through BJCP. And actually, they finally, after years of spinning it up, they finally got the cider certified judge program up and running. But anyway, so through the mead side, you look at it more like a wine because all meads are going to have the elements of sweetness, tannins, acidity, and alcohol. And you look at structure, you look at balance, you look at body, and you look at how those things interact with each other and offer comments and feedback based on how those things interact or don't interact.
What do people typically age mead? Are they aged typically in wooded vessels or does it vary?
So as a whole, they're not. I really am not... No, so Sap House Meadery, I know for a fact, it's also another meadery out of New Hampshire. They actually like to age their meads in various spirit barrels.
Like used bourbon barrels and that kind of thing?
Correct. Yeah, okay. I was actually having a discussion with somebody today post BJCP written exam that I gave about Sap House Meadery, where they actually aged, and I have a bottle of it at the house, where they aged one of the meads in tequila barrels for 24 months.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But as a whole, that's kind of out of the norm. They'll generally age in glass or stainless.
Okay. And that's kind of the norm, and people
Correct.
Are experimenting
yes.
more with it
yeah.
now. Okay,
Correct.
Cool. Awesome.
I know we've talked about mead before. We'll have to do another show, buddy, where we kind of focus on it a little bit. I think that would be really interesting. But what we're meant to do here, primarily in Another Shot with Noah Drinks this time around, is talk a little bit, as we are living in the days of coronavirus here, and we all know the effects that it's had on businesses, our day-to-day lives. Small businesses have obviously been hammered by this. I'm sure most of you out there understand with the hospitality industry, the restaurant industry, how hard they've been hit by the coronavirus situation. And certainly connected to that are going to be small beer producers who depend on tap rooms for their livelihood. And Matt, you're in a situation where you guys are at Old Rail, mm-hmm. where you guys don't distribute your beer. Certainly people can come and buy growlers and stuff like we talked about, but you guys are an on-premise only situation as a true brew pub.
Yeah.
And so you're kind of seeing that from the front row. So tell us a little bit about what's going on with you guys at Old Rail, just sort of, the effect that it's had on you. Mm-hmm. And then let's talk a little bit about some of the numbers that you have, talking about the effects that it's had on in tap rooms around the United States.
Yeah. So for a lot of people, I mean, it's obviously a big change. And in many ways, it's kind of sad to see what plays out. On our end, me personally, I've had to make changes in how I start anticipating things when I look at inventory, how I carry ingredients and make my orders. When we look at employees, we have, reduced that drastically. We have a few employees that we keep right now that mainly deal with just the customer and bringing the order to the car. Filling the growlers and packing the food. And then kitchen staff's also reduced. Coming into work isn't exactly what it used to be,
Lively team camaraderie kind of thing.
Right. At first it was kind of exciting for the staff. It was kind of something new. Things were, people were happy to be working, and they still are. I mean, not discrediting that, but it's become more somber, and it's quieter when you show up there and check in to see how things went for the day. And, there's good days and there's bad days. And, our Fridays, yesterday we had substantial amount of orders come in, and that was really positive and really good. And, we're really grateful. It's definitely changed a lot, and it's in this world, it's very sobering.
Almost pun intended. Is that what? you guys, because of your situation and what you're doing, your beer sales largely are mm-hmm. driven by the fact that people come in
right.
and sit at the bar, sit at a table, maybe order food, maybe don't, and drink the beers on tap. I mean, that's the beer model. I mean, that's mm-hmm. the sales model. Mm-hmm. And I mean, tap rooms all around the country and presumably everywhere that, don't have large scale distribution or don't have distribution, that's a significant hit. So mm-hmm. you were saying that some stuff, and I apologize because I forget the source, but an industry source, and I'll let you elaborate on mm-hmm. that, talking about some of the numbers of what people are saying that are tap room driven businesses.
Yeah, this was according to the Brewers Association. They had sent out a survey in early March, just trying to get a grasp on, as soon as they could, when things started kind of affecting the brewers. And, they do a good job at getting this kind of stuff out to us, but they've kept this running, I guess, through March, almost to April. And some of these numbers are kind of interesting. One of the questions was, had it impacted your business? And obviously, that's probably
gonna go with yes.
Yeah. So on-site sales were impacted by some of the brewers that were. This is over about 1,000 brewers at this point that were surveyed, and it was 90.9% were impacted, and then at about 87 of those tap rooms and brew pubs closed. So if we use that as our sample size, like we were talking earlier, that's a lot of breweries.
If we talk about maybe 7,000 or something, right? And it's a smaller number, I guess, that are going to probably be just tap room driven,
right? Mm-hmm.
But in your point too, like it's early March, so early March, people were saying that upper 80s, 90% mm-hmm. were affected. we all know 100% have been affected at this point because they're pretty much going to have been forced to alter their operations. But you mentioned that how many said that they've actually closed and stopped entirely?
87%.
87%. So, and I mean, and that's a huge number. I mean, it's a huge number of jobs. You also said something too. One of you guys said this, talking about, because people are going to be sitting with inventory on hand and beer, beer doesn't, you know, I guess I should be very careful about this. Certain beers can age for a long time, but a lot of beers are meant to be served fresh. And if you're sitting in inventory in tanks, you got to dispose of it, don't you?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. You know, and there's stuff that we have brewed and we kind of landed in a spot that put the beers we had in our fermenters in a good situation. We have lagers in our fermenters. One of them's in a serving tank waiting to be tapped. That's our Helles. We have a black lager that's in the fermenter that's kind of going through its lagering phases. And then we have our barley wine. I did go ahead and brew a new New England IPA. Now, if you know, this plays out and we're kind of in this kind of situation a little bit longer, that beer won't hold up like the other beers, and that could be, you know, detrimental for that particular style. And when you multiply that across the board and stores and stuff like that, those are definitely flags for some of these distributors and retailers and the breweries themselves as to what happens with that beer. And I imagine a lot of the stuff will get dumped, and that's something that's been talked about, is what to do with a lot of these things, and you know, how you know, some of the stuff gets disposed of. And you know, this was interesting. We were talking about this earlier. It was, we had entered beers into the U.S. Or in the World Beer Cup. And that's a worldwide competition hosted by the Brewers Association. The conference for the Craft Brewers Conference was canceled this year, and that's usually where this is hosted. All the beers, for each entry, we had to at minimum enter 12 bottles of beer. And you factor 7,000 entries, roughly, maybe, give or take. That's a lot of beer. And so they decided to have it distilled. What they could, they distilled.
Which, can I interject real quick?
Please, yeah.
It's arguable it's the best beers that the breweries out of the entire world
submit.
These aren't just their normal. This is their best stuff.
Yeah.
So anyway, sorry.
Yeah, no. That's absolutely right. It's the elite of the competitions. And so they sent off this beer bottle, you know, dumped bottles in the vats and had it sent to a distillery in Denver and had made a hand sanitizer. You know, that's one option to do with some of these beers that retailers can't sell because they're past their date. And, you know, in reality, some of these beers might not actually be bad. You know, they could still be very viable.
But they weren't going to send them back, right?
But they're not, yeah, and they don't want to sell it. So it's kind of a strange situation to be in, you know.
What are some of your thoughts on this? I know a lot of this, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but probably anecdotal, but you're very tapped into all this, no pun intended. What are some of your thoughts here?
It's strange times, you know. It really sucks to see. I mean, I see it a lot going on in Louisiana. I can only imagine the nationwide, worldwide. You know, you got these young breweries, relatively young breweries, 5-7 years or younger, that put a lot of time, love, effort, money, and then all of a sudden just this weird, wacky, once in several century, you know, kind of worldwide pandemics happen, and it's affecting everybody. You know, there's a lot of breweries who haven't survived. I mean, within a month or 2 months into it, that probably never open again. And it sucks.
I was just going to ask you that because one of the things that we know, and I think people are hearing this everywhere, that, you know, the restaurant business already operates on such a thin margin. And New Orleans is probably the poster child for this because we come into the summer months, which is the low season. We're a very cyclical seasonal town here, for those who don't know. And people kind of try and fill up their coffers during this time of year making money, and then because that allows them to actually survive the summer, and we always lose a chunk of restaurants every summer here. And I think that, and you know, that happens here. It's very stark here, whereas I think in other parts of the country and other parts of the world maybe not so much. We know we're going to lose a ton of restaurants in the country. We're going to lose a ton of restaurants in the world. we're going to lose a ton here in New Orleans because we're coming into the summer months when this is going on. So it's like getting kicked twice while you're down. So, I mean, kind of the same thing, I guess, with breweries and taproom-driven places, right? I mean, a lot of these places are just – the juice isn't worth the squeeze anymore, right? They're just not going to come back?
You know, right. And I guess let's use Old Royal for an example. They are lucky because they do – as a brew pub, they do fortify themselves on the food side.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have smaller breweries who just are, you know, taproom only, they're really not in distribution. I'm not going to name any names, but there's – a couple of them in Louisiana,
like locally, you know, by us here,
local,
sure.
Local tap room. Yeah. Hey, you know,
and that's everywhere. Yeah.
You can get it here, and that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys are hurting bad right now. They're hurting bad.
Mm-hmm.
I was having a conversation with somebody today during the judging exam I was given, and you know they're down 30%, which is a nice chunk. And he said, "Well, we're way ahead of the power curve, significantly ahead of the power curve at 30%." So we're better than a lot more, and that's our silver line. And it's like, God, freaking 30%! You're better than
most. Yeah,
that sucks.
Right, because we were talking about that number being upwards at, you know, for those that are still open, being at 70%.
Right,
for example.
That's insane.
Yeah, absolutely. It's hopefully, mm-hmm. you know, I don't need to put any spin on this in one way or the other. It's a shitty situation, just like you said, and hopefully as many of these people survive as they can. Well, let's do this, you guys. Let's leave it there. I don't want to leave it necessarily on a somber note, but we are here on my front porch, and it is spring in Old Mandeville, and our porch light is on, so the bugs are swarming.
And we are all wearing flip-flops. We did not coordinate this.
No, we did not. It's probably the first time. I mean, I always wear them, so it was good to see you guys get the memo. I mean, Sal's starting to look like, you know, like Bob Denver from Gilligan's Island with his hair, with his long hair, and he's got, like, flip-flops on. Sal is going to be a beatnik like me in 2 weeks, man.
Oh, that's big flip-flops to fill.
He's got to start wearing a button-down shirt. So.
He's got a good-looking T-shirt. On you, but yeah, exactly.
It says Beer Hunter.
It does. His shirt says Beer Hunter. We will have a photo of that for you, of course, on the website and on our social media. Matt has pants on, which I'm impressed, but flip flops.
Yeah, we both went shorts. We were practical.
I'm
from Michigan. I know the bug thing.
You've done well here. I'm getting my ankles chewed right now. Well, Matt, do me a favor. Tell people one more time about Old Rail, where we find you on the street and online, as I like to say.
Absolutely. So we are at 639 Gerard Street. Phone number
in Old Mandeville. Got to be
yeah. in Old Mandeville. The phone number is on Facebook. That's really important nowadays. We do take phone orders. And we do waiter. But personally
for delivery. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, that it helps those people out too.
Can people get growlers through waiter? Are you guys allowed to do that?
No.
Okay.
No, we can't do that.
Yeah. So come to the brewery, not take any away from waiter, but you can get a growler and food.
Yeah. Come to the brewery. Pick up a growler, pick up a mason jar, and hopefully we'll have the crawler machine going soon, as soon as it arrives. It's been paid for. So anyways, let's have Facebook, Old Rail Brewery, website, oldrailbrewery.com, and
cool.
Come see us.
Awesome. Come see him. Good beer. Sal, one more time, BJCP, buddy.
Beer Drug Certification Program, BJCP.org, Facebook, whatever. Actual BJCP itself or Louisiana BJCP. Again, I invite, if you're ever interested in learning more about beer judging, you can find me on any of those things. Reach out to me no matter where you are in the country or the world. I know a few folks in the BJCP. I'll point you in the right direction and be sure you're taken care of and set you off in the beer journey.
I just want to give a little plug for Brian's herb program here on the porch.
Oh, yes. Thank you. And my lovely wife, Sylvia. Actually, yes, she should get the real plug here.
If you get a burn, there's a big aloe bush here.
There is.
We have to share with people because it's too big.
There you go. The first time ever my lovely wife, Sylvia, has vocalized on this show, we have aloe to give away.
Yeah.
We have aloe to give away.
It's a very big porch, too.
It is a very big porch.
Yes.
And it's full of bugs. So here as everyone, we see the late night shows, their production value goes down. And as I was joking with a friend recently, so we see all these talk shows that, the you know, their production value has gone down. Does that Does that mean that they're worse, or does that just make the NOLA Drink Show look better? Friends, I'm going to be back with my parting shot.
All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for listening to the show, friends. I do appreciate it as always. This week, we'll update you on some new shows as they happen. We're working on some pretty cool stuff right now. A little bit TBD what the schedule is coming up. You know, or, you know, as you know, like this show, we adapted. We did it on the front porch, and we remained socially distant, all the stuff that we're supposed to do. But also, as you know, we've been doing a lot of stuff by phone, so we're working some stuff up, and we'll let you know as it happens. Definitely look forward to getting back to doing more shows in person in some of our favorite establishments, and that's kind of where it takes us here on The Parting Shot. We certainly know, and something that we've touched on quite a bit here on the program, that you know, the restaurant and hospitality industry, broader hospitality industry, hotels, everything like that, has taken an extreme beating through this process. We know that it's here in New Orleans, a significant part of our economy. It's really the principal segment of the economy, which makes it somewhat unique, probably compared to just about everywhere in the country or the world. I guess there's a few places. There are clearly a few places that are very hospitality industry driven. But for a city of this size and its level of dependency on the hospitality industry, it's significant. And I'm not trying to take anything away from anywhere else. This is really relative and the same for everyone as we talk about the hospitality industry everywhere as it relates to the coronavirus situation. And I get that there's a, you know, a rush to reopen things as quickly as possible. There's the push and pull of the economy. There's the push and pull of the long-term damage that stems really from the economy. But when we talk about mental health, people being driven into poverty, so on and so forth, and then we talk about the immediate needs of public health, we do need to continue to do what it is that we're doing. I think it's incredibly important. I think that we start to see a bit of a light at the end of the tunnel. This is not going away anytime soon, friends. This was all designed to basically allow our healthcare system to deal with this situation moving forward, so we didn't experience a significantly greater number of deaths than we have already and will still continue to, frankly, deal with as we move forward significantly or largely in the coming weeks here in the near future. But this will continue to affect us and afflict us for some time, at least until there are, you know, accepted effective treatments. And then, of course, a functional vaccine that's out there. There's a lot of pent up aggression. There is a lot of pent up urge and need to want to get back out there. I understand that. And our restaurant industry is a part of our culture. The bar and restaurant hospitality industry is so much a part of our culture. And that's the case everywhere. No more so than it is here in New Orleans. I think New Orleans obviously is at the extreme end of that example, but it applies everywhere. We all want to get back. We all want the camaraderie. We all want to be in places that we love, to see the people that we love, drink the things that we want to drink, and all that kind of stuff. I think, you know, we're getting closer to these things. Nothing will look the same after. But we need to kind of see this through. We need to be a little bit more patient. But I will say this, our bar and restaurant industry, they need help. They employ over 11 million people in the United States alone. That's more than the airline industry. We shared something on our Facebook page. You can go find it there. Friend of the show, Neil Bodenheimer, who is the proprietor of Cane and Table and Cure, and also the co-executive director or president, whatever his title is, of the board of the Tales of the Cocktail Foundation. I had a nice interview in Gambit, which is owned by The Advocate and the Times-Picayune newspaper here, just a short little Q&A. And he was talking about some of the problems with the PPP and some of the other things as it relates to the restaurant industry versus the bar industry. Restaurants and bars are not being treated the same. Restaurants can open for GoFood, but we know that model only works for some restaurants, and it doesn't save all the jobs. Bars are not allowed to be open at all. The industry needs help. The industry needs help financially. The industry needs help in a very deliberate way as we address things like the airline industry. And that's huge for our economy. It's huge for our infrastructure. It's huge for the way our world works. I get it. But I would also argue that the restaurant and bar industry is so important to our culture. So many people, not just the jobs, not just the 11 million people, and I'm not trying to diminish that at all. That's probably the most significant part of all this. but it's part of our culture. It's part of what makes us us. And we need to make sure that those places are around when we come back. Yes, it will look different. Yes, it probably won't feel the same, at least maybe for a very long time. But we all need those places to be there for us when we come back, for basically just simply the sake of our mental health, our well-being, our culture, our cultural integrity, everything. It's critically important as we see certain segments be addressed by financial support, bailouts, and things like that. We need to see that, I think, for the hospitality industry and the restaurant and bar industry in particular, because they are so critical to our existence on so many levels. And I know out there I'm probably preaching to the choir, but I just wanted to get that out there and say that as we look to reopen and do these things, that's great. It's not going to save the industry because it's not going to look the same in the short term. So we need to look at long-term, medium and long-term solutions to support the restaurant and bar industry, to allow them to survive, and then to therefore allow them to effectively come back when they can come back. We all need it. Our friends that work in the industry need it. And you and I need it just because it's part of who we are and part of what we enjoy. It's part of our life. It's part of our culture. We need to find those solutions. Get out there and order GoFood, friends. Get out there and support our friends when you can. But be smart. Understand that we're almost there to start to turn the corner. This is the first or second inning, as I hear a lot of people say, and I think that's the case. So we need to look at how we support this industry in the middle innings, which is, you know, oftentimes the dog days of summer, the doldrums of a baseball game. There's a baseball analogy for you. And then we'll see how we do in the late innings. And hopefully there aren't any extra innings, friends. Be safe, be well. That's our parting shot. Here's to you.